My name's Graham Rhodes, and you're listening to the Long River Podcast. My guest today is Ethan Robertson, host of the Wheels Boy YouTube channel, which covers the newest, coolest, and wildest vehicles from the Chinese car market. We're going to be talking about everything Ethan's learned as an automotive enthusiast and reviewer of Chinese cars, talking about their development, their features, the intense competition he sees in the market, and where he thinks they're going as they begin to hit the shores of North America, Western Europe, and elsewhere. Ethan, I'm so lucky to have you on the podcast today. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Graham. I really appreciate your appreciation of my videos. We put in a lot of time and effort, and I always love to hear that people are enjoying them.
The production is first rate, and the niche that you found is just really interesting. So it's a delight to welcome you today. I guess we should start with your origin story, Ethan. How did you get to China and how did you start reviewing Chinese cars?
The short version is that I studied abroad in China when I was at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And when I graduated, I said, I want to go back to China, but I don't feel like I want to go the path of being an English teacher. And I chose instead to do a master's degree at Wuhan University, in which, well, everybody knows Wuhan now. Prior to 2020, I had to explain where it was, but now most people have a pretty good idea. Very soon after starting my first job in Shanghai, I was having just an incredible amount of luck. I was having dinner with a friend of a friend, and he commented, your Chinese is pretty good. I've got two Chinese friends who are members of the automotive media, and they're looking for someone who can do a Chinese language review. A foreigner can do a Chinese language review of a car. And I said, I was born for this. That was in 2019. Spring of 2019, and between 2019 and 2021, we basically built up the Chinese language platforms and our following there, and then also on YouTube. And it was I'll never forget, it was April 11th, 2021, when I went full-time, quit my marketing job, and started doing car reviews full-time, fulfilling my parents' greatest wish for me, which was to become a YouTuber.
So that was the birth of the Wheels Boy channel?
That was the IP, so to speak, for Wheels Boy was actually a pre-existing thing. My two partners had already started the company in mid-2018 before they found me, but I have to give them a lot of credit for realizing that they were relatively late to the game at that point when it came to automotive media in China, and they needed a way to separate themselves from the crowd. And my friend, partner, and cameraman editor, whom I need to give a big shout out, his name is C-Man. C-Man is the beating heart of the operation. Everyone is vital to it, but I have to say, he is the guy who makes sure those videos look TV quality. He was the one who recognized they needed a thing to separate themselves, so they went on the search for someone like myself, who was a foreigner, who would bring a different perspective, but could also speak to a Chinese audience, quite literally in Chinese. And so it was later on when we started the YouTube channel, and obviously it expanded our reach abroad, so to speak.
So I guess YouTube is something of a pivot, like turning your megaphone from the Chinese market outwards towards the rest of the world. What's the story that you want to tell with Wheels Boy?
That's a great question. I know that there are people who see our videos and feel that our intention is to promote Chinese automakers or the Chinese automotive industry. And I wouldn't put it that way. I think I would prefer that people understand it as, I just think that I have been and will be forever an automotive enthusiast. And I think that as an automotive enthusiast, what's happening in the Chinese automotive market is absolutely fascinating. The amazing speed with which these companies are developing, the amazing pace in terms of powertrains and their interiors, their exterior styling and everything, and some of the fascinating risks that they're taking that make their cars just cooler or more interesting to hear about than some of the things that we're getting in Western markets like my own, the United States. So I think it's just a window. I want to create a window into what's happening there for people like me who I know would find it interesting.
I have to agree with you. I feel like we're in the midst of a Cambrian explosion here in the Chinese auto market, and there's so many interesting things happening. And it's just fascinating to watch. And again, you're just in the right place at the right time, Ethan. Like last year was a watershed and China surpassed Germany to become, I think, the world's second largest exporter of vehicles. Can you give us a brief history if you can? Like, where did this come from? It's clearly not an overnight phenomena.
No, you're absolutely right about that. I will try not to read the entire Wikipedia page for the history of the Chinese automotive industry to you. But the short version is cars and foreign manufacturers have been in China as many as over 100 years ago. You had Mercedes-Benz and Ford, who had factories and facilities inside of China. But the what China would refer to as the war of resistance against Japanese aggression and fascism meant that they all left. And then following the creation of the People's Republic of China, they weren't very interested in bringing in Western manufacturers. The Chinese automotive industry during the 50s, 60s, 70s was essentially based mostly around designs that would have gotten from Soviet Union companies that would have borrowed designs and used those. It wasn't until the reform and opening up happened in the 70s and 80s that the Chinese car industry, along with every other industry essentially, really started to explode. And the first foreign manufacturer to come in and create a joint venture, I believe, would have been Volkswagen. And I think it was around the mid-80s. So they created cars like Audi 100, the Volkswagen Santana, which was the Volkswagen Passat sedan in countries like Germany. A car that, by the way, was sold, some version of it or a derivative was sold up until, I think, maybe a year or two ago. They just kept pumping them out. Yeah, it's amazing. And so the 90s is when the Chinese automotive market just really, the world started to realize what was happening. By the year 2000 or so, they're selling 2 million vehicles a year. And it just went even crazier after that. By 2009, they had surpassed the U.S. car market as the largest passenger vehicle market in the world. And as you said, they recently surpassed Germany as the second largest exporter. And now, more recently, I believe they actually finally passed Japan as well. By Japan, at least during a certain period of the year, Japan exported 2 million vehicles and China exported like 2.2 million. So they are, by some metrics at least, the largest exporter of vehicles in the world right now. So I think the aspect that most of my fans and the viewers of my videos are most interested in is the development of China's what they call new energy vehicle market, which it's a term that isn't really used abroad, but I actually think it's pretty useful because new energy vehicles includes everything from plug-in hybrids to pure electric vehicles to hydrogen vehicles, any of these things that essentially aren't a pure gas or petrol internal combustion engine vehicle. And that's definitely been what has vaulted the Chinese car industry into the spotlight globally, for sure.
So you touched on the original structure of the car market, where foreign firms entering China had to participate through joint ventures with local partners. And Volkswagen's such an interesting case because I think at one point in the late 90s or early 2000s, it had a market share approaching 50%, if I remember correctly, which just really was emblematic of how dominant these foreign firms were. They had the brands and they had technology. And it felt like the local car manufacturers who were brave enough to compete against them really had to carve out niches for themselves at the lower end of the market. And now, as you're describing, they've cotton onto something new, which is new energy vehicles. And I'm just wondering, why did they choose to go that path? Because it definitely felt maybe 10 or 15 years ago, that was playing in hard mode. This was new technology and far from widely adopted.
Well, that's a really good way to put it, playing on hard mode, because you're absolutely right. I think that the first part of what you were saying there, which is completely true, is the explanation for the question, the answer to the question. Essentially, what happened around 15 years ago is that Chinese manufacturers, despite their best efforts, were losing market share consistently to foreign brands. Now, these were foreign brands that they had joint ventures with. So these are foreign products. Let's say it's a Honda, but it's a Guangxi Honda, and it is made by the joint venture company. So it's not as though the Chinese side isn't making any money off of it, but it's not forwarding or building the Chinese automotive industry in a way that the central government wanted to see. Understandably, they recognize the fact that if they just continued to be a factory, then they would never really achieve any kind of true status in the global automotive market. So it was with the recognition that they had zero chance, essentially, of catching up on the 100-year almost head start that these foreign brands had in the ICE vehicle market. If Mercedes-Benz has been making cars since 1889, it's very unlikely that the Chinese manufacturers are going to be able to in a few short decades, catch up to them. So what do you do instead? They looked at the landscape, and I think that very wisely, as it would turn out, they said, we think that these new energy vehicles, these hybrids, pure EV plug-ins, are going to be the future. And so we're just essentially going to attempt to leapfrog everybody. We're not going to completely stop making internal combustion engine vehicles. They didn't do that, but they really put the full muscle of the central government behind it in the form of subsidies for buyers, subsidies for companies, and other various incentives to encourage manufacturers to make new energy vehicles, to develop them, and then also for buyers to purchase them. So it was a full court press, as you might say, from both supply and demand side to try and guide the market towards an area where they knew they were going to have a real chance of success, or more of a chance.
So you can't compete against traditional cars. You've got to find like an orthogonal vector, and they chose new energy. So there are a growing number of well-known Chinese brands now, like BYD or XPeng or NIO. But watching your channel, it feels like there are even more brands that we've never heard of. Things like Denza, or my favorite, Tank, Cherry, Huval, Zeekr, Human Horizons, Rising, and I could go on and on. I use the term Cambrian explosion to describe what's going on right now. And it just feels that it's so apropos to all these hundreds of different people vying for survival, essentially, because there's going to be a winnowing out at some point. If you roll back the clock to America at the dawn of the 20th century, there were probably an equal number of car manufacturers then. But then by maybe 1925 or 1930, it consolidated down to like three. So we're at the really fun stage now where we're seeing like all this creative risk happening. And that's exactly why I was hoping to talk with you. So if I can turn the conversation to the cars themselves, what are the vectors on which people try to differentiate themselves and build their brand and appeal to consumers? Tell us a little bit about, how these cars compete with each other in the market.
The short answer is everything is up for grabs. But if to dig down into it, I think that one area that is very interesting and one that is not as appreciated by foreign manufacturers and will help us to lead back into why it is that foreign manufacturers are struggling to compete here in China at this point, is what they call connectivity. So this is an aspect of a vehicle's experience that includes the main screen, as we would call it. It includes Bluetooth. It includes the ability to connect your phone to it, to use apps on the screen. How useful are those apps? How good is the voice command system in the vehicle? And that's something that foreign manufacturers just are very far behind on. And one of the reasons for that is because they didn't appreciate how important that would be to Chinese consumers. I think that Chinese consumers differ in certain ways from, to paint with a broad brush, Western consumers. I'll speak about the United States specifically. With U.S. consumers is that it's not as though Americans don't care about being able to connect their phone with Bluetooth. It's just that they just will have Apple CarPlay and be fine with it.
Yeah.
Chinese cars don't have CarPlay. Instead, they have their own either developed in-house UI and UX, or they will use to cooperate with somebody like Baidu or Huawei to design an operating system for their vehicles. And frankly, they're just, the word we use is smarter.
Would you agree that there's a conflation in the popular perception between electrification and digitization, but really these are two different things?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I completely agree with you. You could have, as is the case with these tiny micro electric cars like the Wuling Mini EV, the Baojun Yep, and all these other ones. The Baojun Yep actually is pretty smart, but you can have a quote dumb electric vehicle. But when this is something I run into all the time with these EVs, and it's not just Chinese EVs, but the reality of the situation is that when the powertrains are all electric and they're all very fast, the difference between them becomes a little blurry. Obviously, the driving experience starts to blur between the different vehicles. And so one of the great ways that they compete with each other is through these things like this connectivity and this digitalization. And so truly one of the biggest battlefields is software. I have a friend Tu Li, who has another, not to promote somebody else's podcast, but I think if your audience is interested in learning about the Chinese automotive market and all of that, then the China EVs and More podcast is a great choice. Just to say that he harps on software and software development.
Yeah.
And he points out that foreign manufacturers, frankly, they just don't get it.
Yeah.
They haven't developed talent in-house to be able to develop these connected vehicles that Chinese consumers want. And considering the fact that China is far and away at this point the most important automotive market in the world, you really have to do that in order to compete.
And I think we saw that culminate last year in the dismissal of the CEO of the Volkswagen Group after mm-hmm. repeated delays rolling out their self-developed OS. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like if you consider a car to be a mechanical product, you're missing the boat. I was at Joy-Con in Shanghai in July this year, and there were just tons of EV manufacturers showing their latest cars. And it felt like these were more entertainment and lifestyle products on wheels. And if you don't have that core skill to design the software and the OS, it's just very hard to iterate and add the features and keep up with everyone else.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. I think that, and it's a very difficult thing to, because it moves so incredibly quickly, the time that it takes you to hire on a bunch of really smart people and talent to create the brain trust you need to develop those things, everyone else is, they're not standing still waiting for you. They're still moving forward. So it's a really difficult game of catch up. It's interesting, the term that the Chinese automotive companies like to use when it comes to the interiors of their cars, they call it a third space. So there's your home, your office or your work in general, and then there's your car. And those are the three main spaces that you will spend time during the day. And so they try to include features within the vehicle that will make you more productive, if that's what your goal is in terms of work, or more relaxed if your goal is to try and have it be like more like a home environment. So that's why so many of these Chinese cars, at this point, the level of standard features on Chinese vehicles, regardless of powertrain, whether it's an ICE vehicle or an EV, it's somewhat mind-numbing, honestly. I can't remember the last car that I drove that cost more than 20,000 USD, which is say about 150,000 RMB, that didn't have at least heated seats, but it also probably had heated, cooled. If it's over 200,000 RMB, it ought to have massaging seats even too.
Yes.
It's truly amazing. And the reason for that is because the competition is absolutely cutthroat. As I keep saying, the development cycles are so short, and what kind of set you apart, your big selling point right now, is going to be something that everyone's going to have in 6 months. So you've got to keep innovating so quickly. And that also has been an interesting development that I think people have been hearing about, is the essentially the price war that's going on in the Chinese market, specifically, again, across all powertrains, regardless. But cars that used to be, say, $30,000 or roughly 200,000 RMB are now being sold for 130,000 RMB or less than 20,000.
Wow.
It's truly mind-numbing. Honestly, every time a new car comes out, my partners and I look at each other and say, I think that car is going to cost the equivalent of, we'll say, it'll start at 250,000 RMB. Then it hits the market and it's starting at 210. And it still has level 2 plus driver assistance system that's essentially the Tesla level of driver assistance standard. It's not a $10,000 option on these cars. It's right. A standard feature.
I guess in many people's minds, there's a trade-off between the price and the quality. But do you think that's like a fair framework today? Is that still valid? Or do you think we're going to get to the point where you can have both a good car and a cheap car? And I'd love to hear you answer that by referencing things like the appearance and the features as well.
I think what makes, as I alluded to at the beginning, I think what makes these Chinese manufacturers so interesting, whether it is exterior design, interior design, features and feature mix, what makes them so interesting and different from Western manufacturers is the risks that they're willing to take in order to gain attention, essentially, in the market. And that really is, on to a greater or lesser extent, what it comes down to. When you talk about the interior of these Chinese cars, and I joke in my videos often that, okay, the gimmick for this particular car is that it does this. And usually that's something like, take for example, the Voya Free, which is a EREV or EV SUV from a brand called Voya, which is made by Dongfeng, one of the largest state-owned Chinese automakers. It has a dashboard that has three screens embedded in it that are in a single pane, kind of that black plastic, but it can raise and lower into the dash. Let's say 4 or 5 centimeters or something like that, or maybe a few inches. Is it useful? Frankly, no. But it's something where a Chinese consumer could walk into an experience center for Voya inside of a mall, which is where you find all of the experience centers for all of these Chinese startups and these Chinese EV brands. Not just startups. Voya is very much not a startup. But these Chinese new energy vehicle brands, and increasingly foreign brands as well, they're finally catching on to this kind of trend where customers don't want to go to your dealership to try a car. They want to, I'm going to the mall to watch a movie in the top floors, in the cinema, in the top floor of the mall. And as I'm leaving, I'm happening to walk by the XPeng Experience Center. I'll just run in and check out the car. Or we'll say, just to keep the metaphor with the Voya, it's something like this dashboard thing is something where a salesperson can have a customer walk in and can say, oh, come here, look at this. And I'm making this connection in my mind right now, but it's the sales equivalent of why TikTok videos that are shorter usually get more views. So it's the kind of thing that fits on a TikTok. You can say, you'll never believe this amazing dashboard in this Chinese EV. And then you take a 15-second sped up video showing the dashboard lowering and rising 4 or 5 times. And that's going to get you a ton of attention. It gets butts into seats, right? The reason that they have to do this is that the competition is so great that it's not enough to just have a solid V with a decent range, decent power, and a decent quality interior. That is just not going to cut it. And that is something that these foreign manufacturers don't understand. And I've literally had conversations, I won't name the automaker themselves, but they were a very large foreign automaker. And I sat across the table from engineers and a guy from their marketing team, and I watched them argue amongst themselves, where the engineer is saying, we developed this thing inside of the car where the atmospheric lights that they have, the LED strips they have. He was so excited because when you hit the turn signal on their car, the left half of the strip of LEDs actually flashes. And the marketing guy who understands the Chinese market said, nobody cares. That is not going to get as much attention as interior of a car where the screen can literally dance, can literally spin and flip and extend out. That's what you're competing with. And so it may feel like gimmicks, but the truth of the matter is, to get back to your question, you asked whether is it possible that we'll be able to have a good quality car that's cheap? And to be quite frank, I think we're already there with a ton of these manufacturers. The quality of vehicle that you can get for say 150,000 RMB, which is nearest makes no difference, a little less than 25,000 USD. It's mind-numbing. The level of features, the level of the range, the comfort, all of these different things. Now, if you were to compare them to all of the foreign competitors, would they be able to match them or beat them on every aspect? And the answer is no. The area in which these Chinese cars still fail to hit the mark is usually the driving experience.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that they all drive poorly. It doesn't mean they ride like ox carts and they handle like tugboat. It's more of a matter of degree where you're not going to have the same level of, what's the word I would use? You're not going to have the same level of quality of weightiness to the suspension between, just random example, between an equivalent sized, maybe BYD and Volkswagen. Now, the difference isn't night and day. it used to be, quite frankly, 4 or 5 years ago, even if you jumped out of a small hatchback from BYD and then jumped into a Volkswagen Polo of the same size, you would say, oh my God, the other one looks, feels like it's made out of tin cans. But that's not the case anymore. But still, there are areas in which they need to improve, whether it's ride, handling, steering feel. They definitely aren't all the way there. But when they do get there, and they will, I have no doubt, either they will create a market in which their type of vehicle is the one that people actually want, or they will find a way to successfully imitate or achieve more like the level of quality and sense of quality that these foreign cars can do, because they've got many more decades of experience producing and developing and tuning vehicles.
What makes getting the feel of a car, the feel of the drive, so difficult to perfect?
I think this is an interesting. I had a conversation with another one of my partners, the other guy who started my channel with me. He's a guy named Justin, and both he and C-Man, who I mentioned previously, have extensive experience in automotive media before they ever met me. Justin wrote for multiple Chinese publications. They both actually wrote, C-Man made videos for in China, or rather, Justin wrote for the essentially the Chinese branches of German automotive publications as well. And his thought on it is that there is a lack of institutional knowledge in Chinese manufacturers. If you go to a General Motors, if you go to a Ford, if you go to a BMW, on and on, Toyota, if you go to the engineering departments, you will almost inevitably find that a ton of the engineers that are working on the cars, they have a much longer history with vehicles. You'll often find more of them are maybe part-time, they'll do autocross, or they'll do track days in their personal vehicle. They're people that are really engaged with and much more knowledgeable at this point about the desirable dynamics in a vehicle. This isn't to say that there aren't talented Chinese engineers. I think all the Chinese vehicles I've driven are a testament to the fact that there are thousands and thousands of them. It's just a matter of building up this institutional knowledge, this buildup of people with great backgrounds that come together that can make these vehicles the way that they are.
Just for, you know, conversation's sake here, I drive a third-hand 2013 BMW X5, and it's a nice ride. It's very tall, which gives my wife confidence on the road. The door has great heft and makes a nice sound when you close it, that kind of thing, and it handles superbly. But I wonder now if that's becoming a luxury that fewer people are willing to pay for. Because when I think that I could buy a new car for the same price or less than I paid for this one, and that new one might come with heated massage seats or LiDAR or air suspension or multiple climate environments or you name it, do I really want to pay the extra for something like that perfect ride handling? So I wonder if the market's going to fragment along those lines as well, or perhaps it already is.
There's a very specific video that I would recommend your audience check out from us, and it is a comparison video we did between the Li Auto L9 and the BMW X7. And it is a genuinely eye-opening video. I know I have friends that work for BMW and Mini who have said, I have forwarded that video to every single one of my coworkers to try and get them to watch it, because it puts in context what is happening in the Chinese market. And I think that the difference between those two vehicles, to summarize, the BMW X7, as you said, it handles for such a huge SUV superbly. It rides superbly. The seats are among the most comfortable I've ever sat in. But in China, specifically in the Chinese market, it costs over 1 million RMB, which is about 145. I think as tested, it was $165,000. Take the Li Auto L9, a vehicle of equivalent size that has not just two gigantic screens in front. It also has another huge, I think, 15-something-inch screen that's in the back then that screen is where you can sit in the chairs in the second row that are heated, cooled, massaged. All the first and second row are heated, cooled, and massaged. You can use really advanced, very easy to use gesture controls to control the large screen in the back row, which makes it easy for children to use without having to touch the screen because they can't reach it. The seats have built-in speakers so that you essentially have a 4D movie experience, like one of those 4D movie theaters where the seat buzzes with the movie. It's got LiDAR. It's got a driver assistance system that now Li Auto is rolling out. They're what they call City NOA or City Navigation on Autopilot, which is essentially like Tesla's self-driving beta. And the car costs literally half, less than half as much as the BMW.
Yeah.
Now, and it also has air suspension. Now, does it ride as well as the BMW? It does not. Does it handle as well as the BMW? It does not. The seats on the BMW are much more comfortable than the Li Auto because the Li Auto is essentially a sofa. But if I go to a Chinese consumer and say, here's what you get for this, and here's what you get for this for twice as much, I think that an increasing number of them are saying, what the heck am I doing spending twice as much on this vehicle that is frankly a worse family car? It's Li Auto, the nail specifically is creating the ideal vehicle for taking your family, your partner and your children around, making sure nobody has any complaints. Whereas the BMW just does not do that. And some people in China, I will say, because this has to be said, I do think that there's not that many people in China to this day who can afford a million RMB BMW who would settle, quote unquote, for a Li Auto. Now that's changing as perceptions of Chinese brands improve, but it's worth pointing out that I do not think this mythical customer that I pointed out, there aren't that many of them because the BMW badge is still very powerful. But frankly, that's not going to last forever.
This makes me think of that meeting you described where you have the engineer touting a feature that the marketing guy just says isn't relevant. And perhaps like the things that foreign OEMs used to compete on just aren't that relevant anymore. And for a lower price, you're actually getting a lot more when it comes to these newer features like connectivity and smart features. I think that's really interesting and probably something people in the West don't appreciate as much.
No, and I think that it's one of the reasons is that there's differing expectations of what a car is going to have when it comes to Western and Chinese consumers. And I think that one small example that I always like to dig into where Chinese cars truly exceed all of their foreign competition here in China is, and it's a feature that I don't think that many people, it's my perception, that many people in the West use, voice commands. Voice command systems in Chinese vehicles, even cheap Chinese vehicles. I don't mean cheap by Western market EV standards of 40,000 or 30,000 USD, 15,000 USD. Those vehicles, voice command systems, are accurate, useful, efficient. They're not perfect. There are some that get really close, but they're things that allow you to do something like put in a navigation destination. And they're good enough that they understand my level of Chinese. And I don't think that these foreign manufacturers, I can tell you that just recently I tried the voice command systems in the Audi, I think it was a Q4 e-tron, which is a all-electric Audi. And I got to tell you, it was like having a conversation with the dumbest person you've ever met. It was nothing. The thing couldn't get anything I said correctly. And its response times were so slow that I often thought, did it just not hear me? And then full 4 and 5 second counts later, it would come back with a incorrect answer. Or the Kia EV6 GT. A fine driving, very fast EV that received a ton of praise in the West. I drove it here and I immediately knew that it was basically dead on arrival here in the Chinese market. I think that I wrote a almost rant level Instagram post about it on our Instagram where I essentially outlined all of the ways in which this car is never going to have a single chance of succeeding in China because frankly, it's just not a good value in the Chinese market. And this is, again, this is a car that receives a ton of praise in the West. Now, not everybody in the West is saying that, oh, it's so cheap and affordable, but they are focusing on certain aspects of it that I think Chinese consumers don't care as much about, i.e. the handling and the driving dynamics and stuff like that. Yeah, I do think that so many of these manufacturers that come over, these foreign manufacturers, they don't have the capacity to provide Chinese consumers what they have been wanting, or what they have been, whether it's been trained to want or what they want naturally, either way. They're not doing a great job of it at this point.
It'll be interesting to see once these cars really begin hitting markets in North America and Western Europe to see if they scratch and itch consumers over there have had unmet for such a long time too.
Yes, yes. I have to say, if you just base it on the comments section of my YouTube channel, there is definitely an appetite for what the Chinese are selling, whether it's Western consumers, consumers in Africa, South America, the Middle East, Southeast Asia. We have a very diverse audience. I think our largest audience by percentage is the US, but that makes up anywhere from 12 to 15% of our audience. The rest of it is pretty much the entire globe, except for Antarctica is on there. And maybe if I really dug into it, there's somebody down here, down there at some base in Antarctica watching our videos. I hope so. But the appetite for affordable, practical, and yet technology-filled NEVs is large. And it's, in my opinion, it's a thing where those that don't have the appetite, they just don't know what they're missing out on. And that is one of the interesting things about doing this channel is, and as I said at the beginning, was just giving a window to people to see what it is they could arguably be said they're missing out on.
Now, this is a podcast, so people have to use their imagination here. And afterwards, you can go and watch Ethan's videos. But Ethan, tell us a little bit about how these cars look. Because on the one hand, and I'm going to quote you on this because I think it was so funny, you reviewed the Trumpy MPV, and I think you said, a battle is underway to see who can come up with the boldest, strangest, some would say ugliest design for an MPV. But on the other hand, you have things like that new MG Roadster came out, which just looks like a work of art. So let me know what you think about how these cars look and, yeah, how they feel to the eye.
Sure. So the designs are another area in which these Chinese manufacturers know that with such stiff competition, you can't put out, frankly, a Volkswagen. You can't put out a very mainstream looking vehicle, even if your vehicle is arguably mainstream, say an affordable EV sedan. Your affordable EV sedan needs to have something about it that sets it apart. As an example, tomorrow I'm going to be picking up, or they're going to be dropping off, a vehicle called the Hyper GT, and it is a mid-sized electric sedan, but for no other reason than the fact that they needed some way to sell the car, its front doors are scissor doors, like a Lamborghini. And this is a car that costs, as best as I can recall, I think the most expensive model is less than $45,000 or so. This is not some crazy high-level vehicle. And the designs that they're willing to do, if I'm being honest, as is the case with the MPV segment, is one of my favorites. I truly have been completely won over by the value of the MPV, the big luxury MPV. I think they're fantastic. I love the concept. I love the execution of them. They're absolutely rolling first class lounges. But the designs in there, as I said, it's a fight to see who can make the most outrageous, the most eye-catching, and the most hideous front-end design. And that somewhat applies to almost every other segment as well. It is a matter of creating something that is going to get people's attention. And the attention doesn't necessarily have to be all positive. It can be polarizing. And that results in, oh my gosh, some designs. You've got stuff on the high end, like the anything from Hi-Fi, but I'll pick on the Hi-Fi Z specifically. It looks like something from Blade Runner. It looks like something from a kind of semi-dystopian, but still pretty interesting future. It's got LED panels, not just on the front, the grids, matrices, where you can display simple graphics like a thumbs up or a smiley face, or in the case of the panels on the doors. And yes, there is an LED matrix grid that runs along both doors. You can actually display words and letters, so you can send messages. You can't do it while driving due to regulation, but when it's parked, you could have a message constantly playing across the thing that says, "Don't touch my car." And it's true in even in lower level segments. I think that there are certain cars that have come out in the Chinese EV market that have been hugely influential to global design. I would argue that something like, certainly here in China, at least, something like an XPeng P7, to give XPeng their due. If you think of a lot of these electric cars now, especially Chinese electric cars, you picture a single LED strip that runs along the edge of the hood, and then the headlights are down underneath. That's a look that was developed by XPeng and has now essentially proliferated to everyone else. And that includes some foreign manufacturers as well. I wouldn't go so far as to say the tables have turned and now the foreign manufacturers are copying the Chinese. That's not the case. But there is definitely a design trends that have been started by Chinese companies for sure.
Where is this going then? We have all these manufacturers. You described it as cutthroat competition. How does it play out? Do you see any leaders emerging or anyone who appears to have like a sustainable competitive advantage in the works?
I do think that there are some. Disclaimer, my advice should not be taken as investment advice.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I usually do that at the start of the podcast, but since you're not like an investment analyst, I didn't this time. But yes, this is just a conversation. It's not investment advice.
Yes.
Please heed that disclaimer.
If I thought I had good investment advice, I might actually be invested in Chinese automotive companies. I'm not because I'm a reviewer. That's the main reason. So I try to keep myself separate from having any kind of a financial incentive in any one automaker. But I think there are some brands that are obviously in a very strong position. And most of them, if your audience, those in your audience who are paying attention to the Chinese automotive market, even casually, would have heard of them. The giant in the room at the moment is, of course, BYD. You mentioned previously that Volkswagen, and I think that would have been the Volkswagen Group in general, had an incredible market share in China. And they have watched over the course of the last 2 years, but especially the last year, that market share has been devoured. And it's not just BYD, but BYD did pass Volkswagen this year, or at least in the first couple quarters, and should for the entire year, pass the Volkswagen brand specifically, not the group, in outright sales. And that is, I think a lot of people in Wolfsburg in Germany are really sitting on the edge of their seats, very scared right now. Because just how quickly the tables have turned, essentially. Yeah. So BYD is really poised to be in a great position. They're obviously already, they're preparing to be exporting a number of their models, their pure electric models. They've got some that are already in Europe, but frankly, they're cartoonishly overpriced. And a little bit of inside baseball, I spoke with the head of a global PR for BYD. We had a dinner when the Shanghai Auto Show happened, in which they invited myself and other media to come and to meet with him. And obviously they wanted to pick our brains about what we thought about the brand and what they were doing and stuff. And he made the bold decision to open up the floor to questions. And one of my colleagues in the industry said, why is your BYD Han sedan, a car that costs 250 or 300,000 RMB, so maxing out at a little over $45,000 USD. Why is it priced at 65,000 euros in the European market? And his response was, he hemmed and hawed a little bit, but he said, "We just don't want to immediately be the cheapest offering on the market." And I get what he's saying. They don't want their cars to be. They don't want to sell based on price alone, because that's frankly what everyone expects the Chinese manufacturers to do. They expect them to come in and do what they did in so many other industries like electronics, where you have I'm going to date myself. You have a CD player. A CD player, which everyone still uses, of course. And the one from Sony costs $50 and the one from China costs $25. They didn't want to use that strategy, at least at first, but they are coming to market with more affordable models in places like Australia, in the EU, South America, the Middle East, all over. Probably the biggest vote of confidence for BYD that I can give is that our company vehicle is a BYD Yuan Plus, which is known as the Atto 3 abroad in places like Australia. And we needed a car that fit our needs and was pure electric so we could drive it where we wanted to in certain restricted areas of Shanghai. And we chose the BYD Yuan Plus. So take that for what it's worth. The other manufacturers, to go a little bit higher up, more upmarket, there's the big three. Again, these are ones that your audience has probably heard of. There's XPeng, NIO, and Li Auto. If you'd have asked me, say, 6 months ago, do I think XPeng, to start with them, do I think XPeng is in a good position? I would have said no, to be honest. I think their last few vehicle launches, and I've said this in my reviews, the last XPeng I reviewed, I think, was the XPeng G9 SUV. Frankly, the company's last couple of launches, their P5 sedan, their G9 SUV, haven't been particularly successful. They haven't been nearly as successful as they needed them to be. But then Volkswagen comes in and injects $500 million or so to buy a stake in the company. And now things are looking a little bit rosier. Time will tell whether their plans to create a Volkswagen branded vehicles using XPeng's platforms is going to be successful. Frankly, I think by the time they get those vehicles out, those platforms are going to be outdated. We'll see if I'm correct about that. If we want to move on to NIO, NIO's vehicles, I've never driven a NIO I didn't like. I've driven every one of them from their current NIO ET5 sedan, which is their cheapest vehicle, all the way up to the NIO EP9, which is this was the car that they produced prior to actually making production vehicles. It was essentially a publicity stunt where they hired their Formula E, the electric version of Formula One team, to create a track-only quad motor, 1,000 kilowatt, 1,300 and many horsepower hypercar, basically. And they let me, for some reason that I'll never understand, but forever be grateful for, they let me drive that on the racetrack here in China. And that was an experience. It was only on power level 2 of 5, which is about 400 kilowatts or about 550 horsepower, but it was enough. And knowing that it was a $3 million car that was the only 15 or so existed on planet Earth, that was enough to keep me from really pushing the limits, to be honest. But NIO, the brand at this point, they've struggled recently with keeping up the number of deliveries. They'll see a good month and then it'll seem like they struggle a bit for a while. I do think that they have what it takes to survive in terms of the product. And then, and things like their service, NIO's known here in China, and it's going to be interesting to see how they translate this to Western markets, for example. They're known for having the best customer service of any of these brands. The best example is more like a Lexus than a BMW, and having all these benefits and things for their customers. But yes, and then finally, just to cover my bases here, there's Li Auto, and Li Auto is the one that, as of now, and I'll get to my big caveat on this in a moment. As of now, they are the one in the strongest position of the three because their three SUV models, the L7, L8, and L9, are selling like absolute hotcakes here in China. Those vehicles, however, are extended range EVs, which for those of you in the audience that don't know, an extended range EV is a type of plug-in hybrid in which the gasoline or internal combustion engine in the vehicle is only used to charge the battery or power the electric motors that obviously move the car. And that's different than XPeng and NIO, who are pure EV only. I say right now that Li Auto is in the best position because their current model lineup of these EREVs is selling very well, but they are about to begin their transition to pure EVs. And that is going to be a challenging thing, as it is for every manufacturer. Can they retain the same customers when they switch over to this pure EV powertrain, wherein they don't necessarily have a different advantage over a NIO or maybe a competitor from XPeng as well? But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised for your dear viewers who are in places like Europe. These are three brands that if you haven't seen them already, you are going to be seeing them for sure in the next couple of years.
Let's use that as a pivot point, because I want to ask you, how does Tesla stack up amongst all this competition?
Tesla is undeniably a very big influence on the Chinese automotive market. At this point, the Tesla Model Y and Model 3 are the among the best-selling, oftentimes the best-selling EVs in their segments. I believe, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, there was a, just yesterday, I was in the office, and one of my colleagues turns to me and said, oh my gosh, because he had been looking at the sales, and I think it was that the Tesla Model Y sold, these numbers may be a little off, but essentially in the ballpark of 20,000 units in 1 month in China, and it was the best-selling electric vehicle far and away. It was that they sold nearly four times as many Model Ys as they did Model 3s, and 5,000 plus units sales for the Model 3 isn't bad for a car that's about to get replaced by a second generation. The Tesla brand is, as much as we talk about these foreign legacy manufacturers, as they like as we often call them, being really threatened and being at risk from these Chinese manufacturers, Tesla's in a better position. That doesn't mean they're unassailable. I think that by being the leading manufacturer of pure EVs globally and being the, I don't know that BYD has outsold them yet in the Chinese market. They may very well have, but being certainly very top of the pile in electric vehicles here in China, they have a huge target on their back. And they were able to out-innovate other foreign manufacturers far and away and have been doing it for 10 years. But all the tricks of the trade that they've used are now being adopted by Chinese manufacturers. All of the fact that the Tesla Model 3's interior now is not special. The only a center screen, very minimalist, Spartan kind of interior, that's been done by a bunch of other Chinese manufacturers. Now, the really easy to use UI for the center screen, that's also been adopted by other Chinese manufacturers. Not always a copy paste, to be clear, though there's a lot of inspiration that's been taken by certain manufacturers. But these are things, OTA upgrades, so over-the-air updates, is something that Tesla was able to lord over the other foreign manufacturers in the past, but now that's a thing that Chinese manufacturers do. It's not that special anymore. So Tesla is still huge here. There is no doubt. I do not think that they are in a weak position, but 5 years from now, I do think they're going to have to work really hard, harder than they have in the past, harder than it takes to make a mid-cycle refresh every 6 years, like they're trying to pass off as a new generation. That's not going to fly. That was okay before. That is not going to fly anymore, I think. And we will see which brand is going to be the one that makes the car that topples the Model Y and Model 3 in China. I don't know which one it'll be yet.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking. You were describing how today's hot feature just becomes a commodity in 6 months. And you have Tesla with this business model where they try to limit the number of production models to drive scale and efficiencies. But you can correct me. I think the Model 3 is 4 or 5 years old now, and the Model Y might be a little younger, but still relatively long in the tooth. And I just wonder how cars like that stay relevant in a market as fast and quick changing as what you've described in China.
The answer is, I don't know that they will. Tesla's relevance right now is driven by a lot of things. I don't want to take away from the fact that they do have a very good product. They for sure do. They still have a lot of cachet in China. I think one of the things that they've benefited from, the same thing that foreign brands have benefited from for decades, which is in China, people care a lot about, this is true everywhere, but in Chinese culture, perhaps especially, people care a lot about face, about appearance, and they want their vehicle to reflect something about themselves. They want to reflect about their status. And so I've lost count of the number of times I've had a conversation with a Chinese friend, colleague, friend of a friend who's looking for a vehicle. And they say, oh, what do you recommend? And I say, have you thought about such and such Chinese brand? And they laugh at me. They laugh right in my face. And they say, I am not going to, a specific example would be a former coworker who was driving an Audi Q5L, which is a locally produced long wheelbase version of the Audi SUV. And I said, you want a bigger SUV, right? Have you considered the BYD Tongue? It's 300,000 RMB. It's a really good deal. It's got all this space. You would have thought that I recommended that he heave himself off the top of the building. It was never going to, I'm not going to sell an Audi to buy a BYD. That was a few years ago, but I do think that still lingers. For context, there's good reason that Chinese consumers are hesitant about their own brands. And it's because for a long time, Chinese brands, they were, for lack of a better term, Graham, they were crap. They were poorly built, often copycats that were bad to drive, unreliable, all these different things. And that's only something that started to change in a really significant way in the past decade or so. So that is why I was talking, when talking about Tesla and other foreign brands, they benefit from this perceived quality difference with and perceived, what's the word? You get more credibility from driving a Tesla to work, even if it's the same price, than you do from a BYD Seal, which is the BYD equivalent electric sedan. And that's not something that's going to change overnight. That's going to take a long time and a lot of dedicated, a lot of hard work for Chinese manufacturers to change. So yeah, I think it's a safe bet to say that Tesla is going to continue to be a really big player in the Chinese EV market for a very long time to come.
I want to, and this is probably towards the close of the interview, you mentioned before that the way these cars are sold has changed as well. Consumers aren't visiting dealerships. They're going to the mall. They're being won over by features and kind of showmanship even. What happens to the role of the dealer in this market?
It's interesting. We have in my office, just sheer luck, frankly, our office space in Shanghai is just happens to be a couple hundred meters in the same office park as a big strip of dealers ranging from Chinese brands like Wuling and Baojun and Chang'an is there, Geely is there, BYD is there with their whole line of cars, even a Toyota dealership, though we don't have much reason to go over there very often. And I've watched there how things have changed for these dealers. I do think that dealers have a future role to play as a sales outlet, but the move towards EVs is something that I know is very scary for dealers because the reality is, when you get down to it, you can't make as much money maintaining an EV as you can an internal combustion engine vehicle because there's way less moving parts to change. There's no oil that needs to be changed. The only thing that you're going to be there for is body damage, is issues with batteries and the three main technologies, the battery management system, the batteries themselves, and then the electric motors. So you're going to be there to deal with that. And then wearables like brakes, tires, et cetera. Not as much money in that. There's just not. As much as I want these dealers in the US and stuff to embrace EVs, I can't sit here and pretend that I don't know why they're hesitant to do it. And also these EVs and these manufacturers, and I know from speaking with people who work for large OEMs from foreign OEMs, American or European or whatever, they are moving slowly but surely towards more of a Tesla style simplified sales strategy, where instead of having thousands of variations of features that you can put together, thousands of different combinations, they simplify it down to a dozen or five. And in the case of American manufacturers, that was a big issue previously. The Japanese, for the record, and it shouldn't be surprising to anyone that knows about Japanese prowess in manufacturing, they didn't have that problem. They don't do that. They've always been very simple. But a lot of them are moving down to a simpler kind of sales strategy, which makes it easier for the consumer, but it doesn't necessarily include as much profit margin for dealerships and stuff who want to encourage customers to select various option packages and things like that for their vehicle. So I think that I don't see that many manufacturers, especially legacy manufacturers, going to what we'd call direct sales like Tesla, where you turn on the app and you just buy the car. You can do that with NIO, for example, but I'm not seeing that happening overnight, but it could. If I would put it this way, if I'm a Chinese dealer, I'm in hog's heaven in that Chinese cars are really coming up. Chinese brands are really gaining a better reputation. They're having appealing products and stuff. But I'm also worried because, again, lower profit margins for maintaining EVs, and then also a consumer base that is less and less willing to deal with the hassle of going to a dealership and would rather just buy something online like they do every single other thing in their life.
Yeah, I get that. And without the haggling or the other kind of unpleasant experiences that dealers can be known for.
Yes, absolutely. It's hassle-free and it is a much more enjoyable experience to just buy the thing and know that you're paying the same thing as everybody else and not having to worry about finding out, well, your neighbor bought the same car and then you talk to him and find out he got it for $1,000 less than me. everyone's nightmare.
Let's close out the interview with one last question. Is there anything else that you would like people to know or ways that they can reach out to you if they're interested in speaking more?
Absolutely. So you can find us on social media platforms like TikTok. The easiest way to find our links actually would be to, if you follow the link to one of our YouTube videos in the description, we have links to our TikTok, our Instagram, our Facebook. So I encourage people to check that out. I also, one of the more interesting things we've started doing recently, after years of considering this as an option, we finally found a reliable partner to help us to export Chinese vehicles. We've been, as you can imagine, from the second I started doing these English language reviews on YouTube, I've been getting emails, countless messages through social media platforms saying, how do I buy one of these cars? Mm. And now we've found a partner that we trust who is experienced with exporting Chinese vehicles. And we can essentially do that for anybody that wants to learn more about how that's possible. Our main markets would be those outside of the US and Canada, for example, because their restrictions are very tight on that. But if anybody, even in those markets, if you're interested in learning more, they can reach out to us at sales@wheelsboy.cn.
Perfect. And I'll put a link to that address too in the show notes. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you, Ethan. I've learned a tremendous amount watching your channel, had a lot of fun doing it too, and I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for the opportunity to meander and give way too long answers that barely answer your question, but I can talk about cars all day long, so I always appreciate the opportunity.